The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the New York Times and National Geographic. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we'll be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. On today's Armchair Traveler, we begin with yet another story about people who had to quickly improvise travel plans after the Israeli-U.S. attack on Iran on February 28th. As you may remember in our previous episode, we had several of these stories. Today, writer Christine Chung's story, Four Continents in 62 Hours, How One American Got Out of Qatar, or Qatar, as we want to say, and sometimes you'll hear Qatar and Qatar, which is also more of the Arabic pronunciation. We're going to try to use it and make it simpler by just going Qatar, like that. Anyway, this was in the March 10th, 2026 issue of the New York Times. And before we begin it, I want to give you a brief overview of what to expect. It goes to say, and these are editorial comments that we found throughout the article. Dr. J. Miller was on his way home from India when the Israeli-U.S. attack on Iran stranded him in Doha, Qatar. And with flying out of Gulf airports all but impossible, he traveled 9 hours by car to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, to board a plane. And then the New York Times, again Christine Chung, followed his 62-hour journey home through photos, videos, text, interviews, and voice memos. And this was all the way from Qatar to New Orleans, by way of Ethiopia, Rome, and Chicago. Now let's take up the main story written by Christine Chung. Dr. J. Miller's once-in-a-lifetime family vacation to India took an unexpected twist on February 28th when his Qatar Airways flight to Dallas made a U-turn about an hour after taking off from Doha, Qatar. Israel and the United States had attacked Iran, which was launching rockets and drones in retaliation. Countries across the Middle East, including Qatar, had closed their airspace and canceled flights, stranding tens of thousands of travelers. Dr. Miller's Qatar Airways flight turned around about an hour into its journey and returned to Hamad International Airport in Doha. Back on the ground in Doha, Dr. Miller heard explosions so powerful that his hotel room's windows shook. It was one of the moments when you tell your spouse you love them, which I did, he said. Dr. Miller, a 45-year-old pulmonary and critical care specialist, had left India a week earlier than his wife, Swathi Nara, and the 5-year-old daughter, Devi, to return to his patients. It was Devi's first trip to the country, and the family had seen wild leopards and visited the village where Swathi's deceased father grew up. Now he would be spending the next 5 nights alone in Doha on an emotional roller coaster, trying to distract himself by cautiously exploring the city. Some of his fellow guests at the Andaz Doha, too afraid to even to go to their rooms on higher floors, sheltered in the lobby all day. He tried calling the U.S. State Department, filling out forms, and reaching out to Louisiana politicians, all fruitless. By Wednesday, which was March 3rd, a day after the State Department announced that travelers should not rely on the U.S. government to evacuate them, he decided to escape the region any way he could. After the State Department told Americans that it could not rely on U.S. government to evacuate them, Dr. Miller made the decision to leave Qatar on his own. Now, this is from a voice memo that was assessing the risk, so this is an actual quote from what he's spoken to his dictaphone. It says, "Rumor, innuendo, suggestion, fact versus fiction all come into play. And do you stay or do you go? When do you go? When do you stay? How long should you stay? How long is too long? When's the right moment?" So those were his thoughts at that moment. Now, he and Swathi, still in India, furiously searched for flights that would get him anywhere outside the Middle East. The Doha airport was still closed, and flight options were scarce. Some jets were departing from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, a roughly 9-hour drive away. Dr. Miller tried his luck. He found a spot on a flight from Riyadh to Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, selecting it because the departure time was a good fit, even given the long journey overland. He quickly applied online for visas to the two countries. We felt we had to move on our own, that there was not enough time or the circumstances to wait for someone. He added that an itinerary that initially felt so crazy and far-fetched, well, it no longer was. Dr. Miller took three different cars on the nearly nine-hour drive across the desert from Qatar to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. He hired a hotel-recommended driver to take him to the border with Saudi Arabia, then had to find another to get him through the visa and customs checkpoints, and a third to drive him from the border to King Khalid International Airport in Riyadh. In all, the car services cost him about $3,000. During a phone interview as the car sped across the Saudi desert, Dr. Miller said that his anxiety spiked each time the vehicle passed through routine checkpoints. His overwhelming emotions were desperation and fear and anxiety to just flee and get out. Despite many cancellations at King Khalid International Airport in Riyadh, Dr. Miller's 3:40 a.m. flight to Addis Ababa did take off. So far, so good, right? Despite many cancellations and all the other things, he arrived at the airport in Riyadh on Thursday evening, March 4th. The terminal, eerily quiet, with most of the departures to places like Abu Dhabi, Delhi, Hong Kong, and Colombo, Sri Lanka, all canceled. Sitting in an empty airline lounge, he nervously waited his flight, 3:40 a.m., this one to Addis Ababa. That flight, operated by Ethiopian Airlines, was packed. He barely slept a wink. Ethiopia had not been on Dr. Miller's travel list before his trip, but he had 15 hours to fill in Addis after his flight landed at 6:40 a.m. on Friday, and he didn't feel like spending them at the airport. Though he was running on empty, he seized the chance to visit the National Museum of Ethiopia, home of the skeleton of Lucy, a 3.2-million-year-old hominin that was discovered in the country in 1974. As a self-described diehard disciple of Charles Darwin, Dr. Miller joked by text message that there was no way he'd miss the chance to see his, quote, my one true love. He also sought out a strong cup of coffee, a beverage Ethiopia is famous for. One of the more famous versions is called Harar, and that's a region of Ethiopia. He arrived back at the airport about 3 hours ahead of his 10:40 p.m. departure, but it still turned out to be a close call. To keep him from missing his flight, airport employees whisked him to the front of the security line. His passport was checked five times. He still had many grueling miles to go. His Chicago-bound Ethiopian Airways flight made a refueling stop in Rome 6.5 hours later, but passengers did not disembark. Then, with its tanks filled, it took off for Chicago, where it landed shortly before 8 a.m. on Saturday, about a full week after his first flight made its mid-air U-turn. And again, that was February 28th. Despite the Department of Homeland Security shutdown and the pausing of the Global Entry Program and Immigration and Customs Line at Chicago O'Hare Airport, moved relatively quickly. At O'Hare International Airport, he faced a potential gauntlet passing through U.S. Customs and Immigration, which has been affected by the ongoing shutdown in the Department of Homeland Security funding. Even without Global Entry, an expedited entry program, the government suspended because of the shutdown, the line moved at a steady clip. Dr. Miller collected his checked bag and waited 3 hours for his next departure, a United Airlines flight to New Orleans. Despite being in the home stretch, he almost didn't take off. Backing out from the gate at O'Hare, the plane struck a baggage cart, but the flight was still able to depart, and it landed in New Orleans a little after 2 p.m. on Saturday. It had been more than 60 hours since he fled Qatar, and in all, Dr. Miller estimated the journey home cost almost $10,000. About an hour later, he stepped into his house, in the Marani area and cracked open a beer. That night, he slept 16 uninterrupted hours. The State Department finally called him back that evening, but he was fast asleep in his own bed, and the call went to voicemail. And he recorded that voicemail, and I'll quote it here for the final part of this story. Yes, hello, greetings. I am calling on behalf of the U.S. Department of State's Overseas Citizen Services. We are reaching out because we received an inquiry about your request to depart from Qatar. Please continue to watch your email for assistance from the Department of State. If you need to contact us, and they give a number for him to call. Meanwhile, he slept through the night. Oh, my. I suspect we'll hear more stories in the future about how people had to improvise travel plans when all this went on in the Middle East, right? And especially how it affected not only major airports, but also some of the marina complexes in that area. Well, next we're going to head to Nigeria, where writer Alexis Okeowo tells us about the daredevils who keep Lagos moving. Now, his story appeared in the September 2025 issue of National Geographic. And the story records this, that in Nigerian metropolis, which is Lagos, motorcycle taxi drivers contend with harassment, chaotic streets, and gnarly accidents. But without them, the city of 20 million would grind to a halt. Now let's find out more as we go to the main story. The fabric of Lagos, Nigeria, is delicately strung together. The megacity spills from the mainland onto several islands in a lagoon that brushes against the Atlantic Ocean. It covers an area of about 1,300 square miles, and many Lagosians navigate the sprawling landscape on the back of a motorcycle taxi, or okada. Their daredevil drivers, called riders, zigzag through the congested streets, dodging potholes and pedestrians, as both rider and passenger, or in some cases multiple passengers, try to stay upright and unharmed. I'll inject here, I have seen in some of my overseas travels more than two or three people trying to be on one motorcycle. It's quite interesting, to say the least. Public transportation here can be inefficient, and roads can be difficult to maneuver on foot. Okadas solve a crucial problem that the government has been able to solve for years, says photographer and National Geographic explorer Victor Adalaway, who was born and raised in Lagos. Some see okadas as a menace. Local officials claim riders are responsible for a large portion of Lagos' traffic accidents, and robberies are often committed by people on motorcycles. To improve road safety, bureaucrats have banned commercial motorcycles from bridges, highways, and many other parts of the city. In 2019, the government launched the Bus Reform Initiative, which has deployed hundreds of new buses along dozens of routes across the region. That has not decreased the population's appetite for okadas, which are still widely used to ferry commuters to neighborhoods the buses cannot reach. Everybody you see on the streets is riding in defiance of the ban because they don't have another option, Adewale says. Traditionally, the motorcycles have been the cheapest choice for passengers. And I have to flip a couple of pages here. And some rides cost the equivalent of less than a U.S. dollar and have provided a reliable living for those who drive them in a city where wages can be hard to come by. I am still riding because my job as a mechanic is not bringing in the income I need on time, says Oluwafemi Ipodiola, a friend of Adewale's father who has driven okadas for over 20 years to pay for his children's education. Fares are beginning to rise as riders factor in the risk of getting caught. Enforcement of the ban is uneven, but residents still operating okadas are vulnerable and face harassment from police, who frequently arrest riders and demand extortion payments in exchange for confiscated motorcycles. People pay as much as 90,000 naira, or $57 U.S., to get their motorcycle back, Adewale says. Sometimes they don't get it back. Sometimes they have to watch it get crushed. The government has impounded and destroyed thousands of okadas as a devastating blow. The motorcycles are expensive, up to 33 times the median annual salary in Lagos, and riders frequently buy them in installments. Riders haven't taken the ban lying down. Numerous protests have led to clashes with police, and at least one okada union has filed a lawsuit against the government, seeking both a repeal of the ban and lost wages. Adewale's opinion of okadas has changed over the years. When he was a boy, his father, who rode okadas for 25 years, used the same bike to take the family to church in the market and to drop off Adewale and his brother at school. His whole family rode on the back of the motorcycle, which was a marker of lower social class. At the time, he felt ashamed and would get off the Okada a short distance from school so his classmates wouldn't see him. But that shame has now evolved into pride as Adewale watched the riders navigate these new challenges. He says they refused to be erased from the city. Well, with his article are some unique pictures, and I want to share some captions from these because they tell us more about what they're going through. In one, there's three people on a motorcycle, and it's Kehinde Onjujimi and his family atop an Okada. Riders work long shifts, sometimes up to 12 hours, to make ends meet. And Okada, by the way, again, is not a brand name. That's the word they use for these motorcycle taxis. In our next picture, we see Kalanko Lukamanu managing an Okada park. Now, that's a dedicated location where riders pick up passengers. A rider might make around 120,000 naira. That's about $78 U.S. a month. And that's quite an interesting picture he's got there. There's several bikes just waiting for people with just one driver at this particular spot that they take this picture. In our next one, we have Andodir Abigail Adaku, who began riding to support her $4 and save up for a small car. And there she is with a pretty fast-looking bike and some kids hanging on and the three daughters standing beside her. And then we have Lunas Igewe, seen here with his three children, used to sell shoemaking materials to cobblers. And that work dried up, so he's since made a living riding these Okadas, and he's got his kids aboard his bike, and it's holding them up well, and it looks like they enjoy doing that. So kind of an interesting thing to learn about Lagos, Nigeria. Now, our next journey on Armchair Traveler is going to delve into travel challenges posed by new technology. In this case, we're talking about artificial intelligence, better known as AI. Those travel influencers don't want freebies. Their AI is a story written by Julie Weed. It appeared in the December 9th, 2025 issue of the New York Times. Ridaka's thick black hair falls in artfully imperfect waves below her shoulders, the misty hills of a northeastern India providing the backdrop to her series of Instagram posts. The young influencer, whose skin looks impossibly flawless, perches on a wooden table at a cafe, showing off her lunch, a bowl of saffron-colored noodles, to her nearly 7,500 followers. She rhapsodizes about the fiery chutneys, spices, and bamboo handicrafts of the region. But Rahika can't taste those fiery chutneys, smell the spices, or buy any souvenirs. And oddly, the person behind her seems to have her head on backwards. Rahika is the product of artificial intelligence. There is an image in the article that describes this produce of artificial intelligence. An AI-created female influencer with long dark hair wearing an olive-colored long-sleeve shirt over a white tank top along with olive pants, whose cuffs are rolled up over light brown boots. Now, she's holding a pot of red coffee beans in her right hand and has her left hand in her pants pocket as she looks off in the distance in front of a backdrop of misty green hills. Now let's return to the story. Travel companies, tourism boards, and other businesses are turning to AI-created influencers like Rahika to lower cost messaging and create content more quickly, and human influencers fear they're being elbowed out. Now, influencers who typically amass social media followers with fabulous photos and videos of destinations have become critical to the travel industry. According to Expedia's 2025 Traveler Value Index, 73% of consumers say an influencer's recommendation has helped them choose a destination, a hotel, or another element of a trip. For responders under 40, that number increases to 84%. Companies and destinations have showered top influencers with money and freebies. It can be incredibly lucrative to be a major influence, said Steve Morris, the founder of the marketing agency New Media, who works with travel brands in the United States, Europe, and Asia. And travel is one of the most profitable categories. A single post can earn $100,000 or more, he said. That may be why a 2023 Morning Consult report stated that 57% of young people ages 13 to 26 said they would become an influencer if given the opportunity. Blurring reality. Large travel organizations appear to favor beautiful young women for their AI avatars. There seem to be few, if any, men, and they often blur the line between the digital and real worlds. Sama, Qatar Airways AI flight attendant, who represents the airline on its website as well as on social media, wears her onyx hair in a neat bun when she appears in her burgundy uniform and more casually when she's, quote, off-duty in her Instagram feed. A caption for another image provides a closer look at yet another AI creation. It says, an AI-created female flight attendant wears a burgundy Qatar Airways uniform with a trim hat, jacket, and multicolored ascot. She is standing in the cabin of a premium class section of an airplane and is smiling with her lips closed. Now, she looks strikingly lifelike, if a bit two-faced tune, if you will. Sometimes she posts to her 328,000 followers as if she's a person appearing to converse with a real couple aboard a plane and asking if they had remembered to bring their souvenir magnet from Tanzania. Or she writes emoji-peppered posts that make it seem as if she's had actual experiences. My camera roll after a 48-hour layover in Hanoi. Scooters, street food, and sunsets. The city has my heart. Other times, she acts like a digital persona, saying in one post, as a virtual cabin crew, I have never been a child. Well, still another image is going to give us another look at another AI influencer. It's an AI-generated woman with shoulder-length blonde hair. She's wearing a loose brown sweater and blue jeans, and she carries two buckets full of green grapes through a blurry vineyard. The German National Tourist Board digital storyteller named Emma has shoulder-length blonde hair, wears casual clothing like an oversized sweater. She promotes destinations like the German wine country on social media, including Instagram, where she has 29,600 followers. In one post, she carries two buckets of green grapes, writing, "There I was, clippers in one hand, a full bucket in the other." Comments on AI influencers' accounts range from heart emojis and words of affirmation to attempts to out them as AI. Some people don't seem to realize or perhaps care that the original influencers on an AI-generated Fovo Osama, the virtual flight attendant, boarding a plane. So that is quite amazing, to say the least, to be reading about these AI things. Well, all of this, of course, because of the fear by the real people being replaced. Human influencers, especially those just getting a foothold, are starting to worry. Jen Ruiz, a lawyer turned solo travel expert who posts to nearly 50,000 followers under the Instagram handle Jen on a jet plane, said the rise of AI influencers had caused an uproar among content creators who feel they're being replaced. To make matters worse, she said, it's by an entity that doesn't share their passion or experience. Now, AI influencers will take audience share, sponsorships, and ad revenue from human influencers, said Aida Molenkamp, who shares her travel and food experiences with 34,000 followers on Instagram. They'll compete for the same attention spans, and in some cases, they already are, she added. Now, we have another image here, which two people pose in a bright kitchen with light wood cabinets and an island. A woman lounges on a stool wearing a red dress, and next to her is a man with a beard standing with a loose tan shirt. The shift is also starting to affect more established influencers with huge numbers of followers. Christiander Balalin, a lifestyle influencer who posts as Chrisline to more than 5 million combined followers on TikTok and Instagram, said she had experienced a decrease in available paid work from brands. Just a year ago, she said, hotels wanting to show off my luxury experiences might cover creators' flights, rooms, and a lot of extras along with paying for their work. Now they might pay for the room and say, that's what you get. Ms. Balian said they have another advertising option, AI. Cheaper than live talent. Mr. Morris of New Media has seen a substantial increase in spending on AI-generated photos, captions, and social media avatars by hotel and other travel clients in the United States, Europe, and Asia. About half the businesses he works with are experimenting with using AI for marketing, he said, and he expects more to follow suit. Those using the new technology are currently devoting about 20 to 30% of their marketing budget to it, he added. Creating a travel avatar say a local guide with some basic customization, can cost $500 to $2,000 with the help of an AI avatar library like Hey Jen. A set of AI-generated imagery and video showing a hotel in different seasons, for example, cost the same. A fully synthetic character, an avatar created from scratch with a unique visual design, personality, voice, and mannerism, cost $5,000 to $10,000, or up to $15,000 if the AI is constantly learning and updating, Mr. Morris said. Such advanced digital personas might be used as social media personalities with dedicated Instagram or TikTok accounts. And we have another image here. It's an AI-generated woman with her brown hair tied back in a loose bun looking over her right shoulder in front of what appear to be stone temples, and she's wearing a loose white dress. Using an avatar and AI-generated imagery together instead of hiring live talent and traveling production crew can significantly reduce the time and cost of producing an online marketing campaign, said Mr. Morris. So there you have a pretty good idea of what's going on here. So, okay. Despite its investment in creating all of these influencers, SAMA, Qatar Airways, says it does not plan to use fewer human influencers. It is not about choosing between humans or AI, said the airline. It is about using both together to make our brand more accessible and more intuitive for travelers, said Babar Rahman, Senior Vice President for Marketing and Corporate Communications at Qatar Airways. As technology advances, AI-created travel bots and influencers are likely to become agentic. Now, that's a term that describes a system that can take an action on its own, said Ari Adan Kibari, founder of the marketing and technology consultancy Atlas Perk. That would mean an AI influencer could, for example, help followers book travel arrangements or make dinner reservations. And while viewers may value the feeling that human travelers are sharing their unvarnished adventures and opinions, the AI avatar's lack of authenticity will soon be harder to detect. The colors, the detail, they're already insanely good, Mr. Kibari said. It can also be impossible to tell the difference. All of this leaves some travelers like Taliesin Black Brown, 28, a filmmaker from Seattle, feeling even less trusting of what they see online. Social media, he said, already felt fake and vapid. Now, he says, this stuff is even more inauthentic because it's not even connected to someone's real life experiences. Wow. Well, let's end today's journey with something just as challenging, I guess, and that's the fact that Christine Jung tells us that TSA has announced a $45 fee for non-real ID travelers. Her story appearing in the December 1st, 2025 issue of the New York Times. And time permitting, we'll just read part of this. Traveling without a real ID compliant form of identification is now going to cost you. As of February 1st, 2026, travelers without one will be required to pay a $45 fee in order to fly from U.S. airports, the Transportation Security Administration announced in December. Travelers will be able to pay the fee, valid for a 10-day period, before they arrive at the airport. Details about online payment or what screening is entailed in this alternative identity verification process, called TSA Confirm ID, were not yet available when this article was published. In May, after years of delay, the government began requiring real IDs, as you may recall, which are federally compliant state-issued driver's licenses, learner's permits, or non-driver IDs at airports. Other identity documents, including passports and permanent resident cards, are also considered real ID compliant. Government officials says the change was meant to enhance security and creates a consistent standard for state-issued documentation. So that brings to an end today's journey on Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be with us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. And I remind you, the content of our program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.